and welcome to Flocking Amazing, the podcast all about deep and joyful learning from the team at Bird Brain Technologies. I'm your host, Sarah Fitzhenry, robot fairy godmother and all-around education enthusiast. Bird Brain is known for its groundbreaking technology for students, but this podcast is all about the grown-ups that guide and inspire them. And you know by now, listeners, that I love having different kinds of educators on this podcast, and I'm thrilled to be talking to what for me is a completely new field of educator today. We have the education director for the ScienceWorks Hands-On Museum in Ashland, Oregon. Welcome, Ash Friend.
Hi, Sarah. Really happy to be on the podcast. Thanks so much.
I cannot wait to talk to you. And I want to tell our listeners, we connected because you wrote in saying that you were working with the Hummingbird Kit and looking for some support for a program that you were running. And I like jumped at you through email. I was like, wait, what do you do? This is so exciting.
You were so helpful. Thank you. We had a little troubleshooting question and we played around with it. And I just thought, well, what if we ask BirdBrain since they might have heard this question before? So thank you so much.
Oh, we love answering questions and we love hearing when people are supporting with tools. So I think we all did a collective cheer when you wrote in. Let's find out, Ash, who are you and what is your teaching story?
Sure. I am the education director at ScienceWorks. I have been kind of involved as a teaching artist going into schools for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I have been involved with maker education for about that amount of time as well. I am a poet and illustrator, but got really excited about the maker movement and especially how robotics can blend with written curriculum. Just there's so many cool things you can do to enhance students' creative writing with robotics.
Wow. So I feel like I could maybe make a list of the things that you don't do and it would be shorter of the things that you do. But so you started out as an artist that went into schools teaching
yes.
students?
Yeah, kind of visiting instructor for going in to teach kids creative writing and poetry.
Oh, great. And when you talk about the maker movement, for any listeners that don't know that term, how would you describe the maker movement? That's a big question.
Basically, empowering students to kind of make their dreams a reality, and the skills they use along the way are the valuable, measurable skills that assessments like. So that STEM learning, science, technology, engineering, and math kind of blended with the arts and humanities in a hands-on project kind of makes people be able to take an idea and make it reality.
What a great description. And it really can involve all of those skills and all sorts of different subjects, almost depending on the lens that you look at you can't create something unless you've thought about the scale and the angles and the size, and it's going to come from a theme and a character and some sort of, right? It's just everything wrapped up together. And do teachers need to have a dedicated maker space or a lot of expensive tools in order to make that happen?
Oh, no way. We've worked, you know, going into schools and going into community places. I usually tell people we need a table. Or a table's nice. a power outlet is nice. And we use a lot of found materials, a couple of hot glue guns, you know, some Sharpies, some scissors and tape. That's kind of your basic, what is crucial. And then you can scale up from there.
So it's maybe, I think sometimes I hear people talking about making as if it's the gear that you have, and you make it sound more like a mindset and things that the users bring to it.
To me, it's definitely a mindset. And what I love about it is it kind of brings out the engineer in everyone. If we think of engineers as solving problems, one way we can get creative is what we have, thinking about, I don't have my dream materials, but how can I take the materials I have and use those to make my project?
What a great life skill too. It's pretty rare that you're going to have exactly the materials that you want for whatever project you're working on, whether you're 6 or 60, and so learning to plan and to work with the materials that you have. That's a pretty important thing to learn.
Yep, absolutely.
So how did you make your way to technology and to creative robotics, and how do you use it in your role at the ScienceWorks Hands-On Museum?
When I was going into schools as a teaching artist, I researched, you know, what criteria teachers were expected to, you know, for performance for their students, what would be a valuable experience for them. And so as I was researching Common Core Language Arts and Math Standards and Next Generation Science Standards, I was seeing that use of technology was a standard all across the board. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about how can we define technology? How can we employ technology into these projects? And kind of taught myself how to use the technology.
Ooh.
And I mean, we started out with really basic technology. We just started videoing things on phones. We would make a project, and like we did a lot of shadow puppetry. And we would make short films of our shadow puppets. And then we went to stop motion animation from there. And that's how we started using kind of like Hue animation programs and other simple Google stop motion animation programs. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, I took a course through Tufts on using hummingbirds. I was like, oh, we can do some really cool stuff with this.
You look like you were going to say, we could do some real damage. And I was like, that totally would have fit too.
But I was like, oh, this is so cool because the course I took was on modeling robots after the movement of organisms. So I got assigned a mole, and I had to look at some video footage of a mole like moving around in the dirt. And then I had to program my hummingbird to move in a similar way. So it was really cool. This was my first hour of using a hummingbird. I was like, oh, these are really easy to use. And it has a very cool, like you could use it for biology, you could use it for math, you could use it for my favorite, you know, art type, like you could design a car for a god or something and then use the hummingbird to make it go. So just had a kind of idea explosion playing with it.
Is that a big part of your work? I have to be honest and say I'm not 100% sure what an education director at a hands-on museum does, but it sounds like you get to explore a lot.
I'll give you a quick info. You had asked what I do in my job, and I do a lot of things from helping with grants to managing grant-funded projects to supporting our education team, collaborating with our exhibits and operations teams and our marketing team, being a facilitator. Like at an after-hours event, I might be doing chemistry with adults or science demos with, you know, mixed age groups. And then my really fun part of my job is getting to do stuff like this, exploring new materials and designing new things that we can do with our visitors.
That's so cool.
Oh, thank you.
I was going to ask, what is a day in the life like? But you just named so many things that I can imagine that no 2 days look the same.
They're kind of the most fun thing about being a museum educator is, like you say, no 2 days look exactly the same. We might be going on an outreach to a rural school and spending all day and seeing like 300 kids through the course of a day.
Wow.
We might be on site having field trips come through and, you know, working with kids from preschool to high school at different times of the day. And we might be running camps, like specialty camps. We did one a couple weeks ago about natural dyes. So we took a whole bunch of household, just grocery items, and made them into dyes and dyed fabrics. So kind of just each day can be its own fun challenges.
Oh, that is so, so neat. Do you have a favorite thing You just named so many cool things.
A favorite thing to facilitate?
Something like if you wake up and you go, oh, it's the day we get to visit schools. That's my favorite. Or, oh, it's the day I get to host a workshop. That's my favorite. Or
I have a lot of favorites. My absolute favorite is probably running camps, because you get to be with the students for an extended period of time and you can do some really cool projects together. Mm-hmm. And my favorite kind of camps are probably, well, any camp that combines science, technology, and art, but we have two that are my favorite, and one is a mythology-based camp we just delve into different world cultures and myths, and then they'll do projects that are based on those. So we've looked at, like, you know, myths from all over the world. One year, the kids were all into mermaids, and they were learning all these, like, outrageous and kind of scary mermaid myths, and then learning about deep sea creatures and designing mermaids based on these, like, scary deep sea life forms.
Oh, cool.
And then we have a really cool one we call Creature Creator, that's basically looking at Frankenstein and other kind of sci-fi, about combos of biology and technology, and kind of talking about what makes a monster. Do monsters have feelings? Could we be friends with the monster? And then we make our own monsters.
I want to join both of these camps. That's so cool. I ran a camp in the summer of 2020, a virtual camp where we did something similar to mythology, and the students got to choose the subject that they felt passionately about and how they wanted to share it. And something about them having that freedom. We had skits, we had songs, there was costume design, there was PowerPoints, it was so, so cool.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, giving students autonomy that's where they are gonna just surpass all of your expectations.
Oh, yeah. And I wonder, you probably, when you get field trips in the museum at least, and maybe when you go to schools too, get teachers kind of watching what you're doing and elbowing you and being like, what are you doing? How do we do this? So, I mean, do you ever, well, first of all, can you share a challenging moment and a rewarding moment from the creative robotics experiences that you've had?
Oh, sure. There's so many. One challenging moment we're navigating right now, actually, is a device incompatibility issue.
Oh.
Those most recent Apple devices that just had the update. So there's an incompatibility issue with our project that we're doing right now. And we discovered that half of the devices in a classroom worked fine and half did not. And because the teachers themselves aren't the tech managers, they don't always know what tech they have.
Mm-hmm.
So we are working to try to talk with tech managers to find out what tech each school has, so we can give people a heads up before we come to them of, there's a little workaround if you have this, you know, this little incompatibility. The nice part is that once we saw what the troubleshooting workaround was, it's not that hard to fix it. But just discovering it, we had 1 hour where we were kind of all frantically on our phones and like, we're going to make this work.
Oh, every teacher who's ever worked with technology in their classroom is doing exactly what I'm doing, which is like head thrown back, hands on the side of the face, like home alone, because we've all been there.
Well, the good part was we also bring out an analog kind of a how to do coding, block coding as a puzzle. Mm-hmm. And so while we were working on our workaround, the students were still able to be kind of practicing with their analog block coding project.
So smart.
It was a little bit of a rough day for our outreach educators. As a rewarding moment, there's so many. Probably the Some of the most rewarding moments are when you have a student who says at the start they're not good at technology or they don't like technology. And, you know, we'll be like, what do you like? They'll be like, well, I want to make videos or I want to be a singer. And then we can be like, oh, would you like to make a robot that could, you know, what would a robot look like if it could be a singer? Mm-hmm. And then they kind of start thinking about that. And when they can get past the resistance and actually create something, then that's very rewarding.
Well, they're not just getting past the resistance. You are guiding them through it. True. You know, you are meeting them where they are and saying, I hear you're interested in this. Your interests matter. That's a really great thing that makes you who you are. And I have something that you can take that interest and create something magical with it. I think that's one of my favorite things about creative robotics is you're not asking students to leave any part of themselves outside of the classroom. Yeah. They get to bring their full selves in and explore their passions with it. Have you seen any really wacky passions?
Oh yeah, absolutely. you know, everybody tells us what they want to do and what they want to be. And a lot of them want to, or they tell us they want to do something in sciences. You know, that's always exciting. Sometimes they'll want to do a science thing and like be a influencer or something. Mm-hmm. So that's always cool too. People will come up with things like a couple of years ago, somebody wanted to make a car. We were doing a car project and they wanted theirs to be a cupcake car. So, you know, they'll just come up with wild cars. And, you know, we're like, sure, go for it. What will the cupcake car look like? You know, how's it going to move?
Will it run on sprinkles?
Right, exactly. What's the fuel of the cupcake car?
It takes a special educator to do the yes and the improv to roll with it in that way.
That's a real skill for museum educators, I think. I mean, I think classroom teachers are great at it too, but we definitely have a very improv yes and mindset. And then, you know, the real challenge is you got to hit your criteria while also giving people the most creative freedom possible.
I was just going to ask if you have more freedom because you're not necessarily bound to standards in the same way that classroom educators are, but it sounds like maybe you are bound to standards.
We're bound to standards internally because part of our museum's mission is to be a resource and support for teachers. Mm-hmm. So, for us, it's definitely, like you said, do teachers ever kind of get ideas from us? We overtly, part of what we're doing is modeling for classroom teachers, like how things they can do in their own classroom to be hands-on learning and project-based learning that still is standards aligned. So like, yeah, we don't have some of our projects. We have certain workshops that are free form, just maker is not as strictly tied to criteria, but our field trip and outreach workshops are still tied to the same criteria that like a classroom lesson would be. And we design them that way because we want to be a very good support.
I had no idea. Is this a common thing for museums to support teachers in this way? Should more teachers be looking to the museums in their communities?
Absolutely. I would highly encourage teachers to check out the museums in their communities, see what their education departments have, and also like look online. Museums, you know, like national museums, the Exploratorium or the Field Museum, Science Works, they all often will post lessons online that will have the standards outlined that the lesson supports.
I'm learning so much today. Wow. So what advice would you give to teachers that are looking to start teaching with creative robotics, whether they're ones that have been lucky enough to walk through the doors of your museum or to work with you, or ones that are listening from thousands of miles away that are interested in getting some of this really cool explorative learning and this great attitude?
If their district has a tech resource library, or if their district has a STEM hub or some kind of professional development opportunities for teachers, I know in Oregon, we have a great district here in Southern Oregon that provides a lot of free professional development. I would start by checking that out because there's often a lot of really good opportunities there. Secondly, I would check out museum resources for educators because there's some really good ones that are, standards aligned and fun. And third, I would probably say if you get an opportunity, try a maker project at your local library or your local maker space. It'll be invaluable because you'll be getting to experience the same things your students will, including like the frustrating times.
So important. And when you can put yourself in the shoes of your students and try it yourself, you start to understand why it's so welcome in schools, why they get so excited when those moments are coming.
Or even, I mean, like if your school has a library or a makerspace in the school, talk to your colleague who operates it and see if they could help you put together a little teacher maker time just to work with your colleagues together.
Oh, how's that for a fun faculty meeting? Can you imagine going to a faculty meeting and thinking that you were going to get like lectured and then getting to make something? That'd be so
Exactly.
cool.
Well, our quote unquote faculty, we do schedule in like periodic, we're all going to learn a new device together, or we're all going to learn a new project together. And it's really fun because it's team building as well as learning your technology.
Oh yeah, that's such a great way to strengthen those relationships. And I know I was just thinking our public library has make and take crafts. So you can do it while you're there. My daughter's 6 months old and we go to story time every Saturday and she is 6 months old. She can barely use her hands, but I make the crafts. So like it's and she watches, but she can't do it yet. And it's still so fun. It gets me creating something every week.
Exactly. It's so fun. And like you say, even if your child's too young to actively participate, just like when you go to a story time when your child can't read, they're associating that activity with being with somebody that they love and with a really good experience. So it's really valuable for them.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's time for my favorite question. Ash, what makes you a flocking amazing educator?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Your eyes just got really big.
I think probably why I would be a fucking amazing educator is I can still tap in really easily to that student mindset and can really put myself in the shoes of whoever I'm working with. And we work with kids of a lot of different ages. So I think that I haven't turned off my curiosity and I'm still really wanting to try things in different ways and to experiment is probably my key skill.
I have never heard that answer before, and it makes so much sense. Sometimes, as educators, we talk about how kids are so curious, and it's just understood that the end of that sentence is, it's a shame adults aren't. And I don't know that I agree with that. I think curiosity is a muscle that we have to strengthen. But when I meet adults that are still so curious, I agree that is what makes you a flocking, amazing educator. I think all educators should have to flex that muscle and work on their creativity and their curiosity like that.
I think it can be tough for sure when you're meeting so many other needs. Because especially like if you're supporting kids in a classroom year round, you're really a key support for those kids. And we're meeting a lot of needs. But yeah, if there's even one little thing that you're curious about, even if it doesn't directly tie into work, it will come out in your work no matter what it is. You'll find a way to tie it into work.
And kids can, I swear they can like smell it.
Oh
If
yeah.
you walk in the door and if you have that childlike mind and like to wonder, they just, it's like the Pied Piper. They just follow you around wanting to know what it is you're doing and what it is that you're so excited about.
Yeah, and they'll want to tell you too, they'll I get a lot of my best ideas from students for sure.
I think like enchantment is contagious. When you are enchanted with what you're working on, and when you're enthusiastic, they just can't help but give it right back to
Absolutely. And you can it's kind of a feedback loop. You can get excited by what they're excited about. So, I mean, like for an adult who's like, I don't know how to be curious anymore, I'm tired. I think one way to ignite that curiosity is to work on a project with your students and to just be a side-by-side learner. Just come in and I don't know. I'm lucky because I can overtly say this to my students of, I am learning with you, where I'm a beginner too, so we're going to be learning together, but I have some resources we can look at together. So it may be harder to do that in a formal classroom.
Think it really depends on the teacher's comfort level, but I mean, that is the way to get your curiosity and your creativity back, is to give yourself a project that you would give to a kid who's exercising their curiosity and creativity. I love that.
Thank
That's,
you.
I know we technically finished the advice question, but that's good advice.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners before we wrap up today? This conversation went by so fast.
Yeah, I really did. I would say if you haven't started using technology in the classroom and you're not sure where to begin, I do think Berberine technology is a great place to begin. I will tell you, I've gone through all the tutorials and they are really helpful. But there's, other tech projects that are super easy and fun to use. And I would just say, if you have district resources or you have a makerspace or a library that you can get to, see what they're doing with tech and just start playing with it.
Play, explore, find your supporters. I love it. Oh, Ash, thank you so much for joining me and for telling us all about the life of an education director and a museum employee. I feel like there's a lot of people right now that are Googling, how do I start working at a museum?
Oh, I'll give one more shout out. If you want to learn about museum education, check out any museum within driving distance and see if they have any volunteer opportunities. They absolutely will. And just, start volunteering if you are able. That will usually teach you a ton. See what they need for summer hires, because a lot of teachers in our region anyway work in museum programs in the summer, and it's a great way to just kind of get that fun informal education for a limited time and can get paid for it too.
And to connect yourself to such a
Yeah.
great community resource. I'll be offering Finch Robot Camps at the Virginia Discovery Museum, which is the
Hey.
hands-on local museum near me this summer. And we are hoping to create some museum resources and curriculum for educators like you, so we have them available on the website. So I am very, it will be my first time offering a camp through a museum, and I am like weirdly excited. I'm so
Oh,
excited to play in the museum every day.
so cool. I hope you have a great time, Sarah. I would love to hear about it sometime.
We'll have to get you back on the podcast and we can chat about it and talk about some of the ways that people can work with museums more.
Sounds great, Sarah.
And we mentioned a few different resources in this episode that I will link. I will link to ScienceWorks Hands-On Museum in Oregon. I will link to the Virginia Discovery Museum since I mentioned them, and that Tufts class that you took, the biomimetic robots course. They do have an online curriculum with the hummingbird kit, and it is so awesome. You could do it as a 1 hour standalone lesson, or the full curriculum is 15 hours. And I have spoken with the team from Tufts before and have some videos from that that maybe I'll have to reshare because, man, they are brilliant.
It's so cool.
So cool. Ash, thank you so much for being here. What a great conversation. And I look forward to having you back sometime soon.
Thanks so much, Sarah.
Listeners, thank you for joining us for Flocking Amazing, the podcast for quick, bite-sized conversations with real teachers sharing their real expertise and providing real inspiration to us all. We'll have a new teacher conversation dropping soon, so don't flocking miss it.